Friday edition of Bickley and Murata Mornings live from the Ak Chin Community Studios. And here joining us to talk about the NBA, Phoenix Suns offseason, all that good stuff, senior writer from Sports Illustrated, part of the Crossover Podcast, Howard Beck, joins us here on the 72 Sold Sports Line. Howard, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Good. How are you?
Good. We were talking, and I just want to get your observation on it. We were talking earlier about the overall quality of this NBA playoffs and just this prevalence of blowout games. There's been 19 20-point blowouts or more already in the playoffs. That being said, Howard, how would you rate on a scale of 1 to 10 the quality of these playoffs so far? I think they've been down, quite honestly.
I had not given it 2 seconds of thought up until now. We've had two game sevens.
Two game sevens that were both blowouts.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess we like series going seven games.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There was, you know, that's something.
And we didn't like the game seven we had, Howard. Let's start there. Let's start with the game seven we had. And what did you've seen basketball teams in your lengthy, illustrious career that did not meet expectations. What do you make of the collapse of the Phoenix Suns?
I'm going to try to avoid. I'm definitely going to avoid any pandering here. I'm going to hopefully not border on insulting. I didn't think it was that big of a collapse in the sense that I never believed that the gap between the Suns and the rest of the league was proportional to the gap between their record and the rest of the league.
Okay.
The record was dominant. The performance was dominant. The team itself never struck me and didn't strike a lot of people around the NBA as being the typical construct of a dominant NBA championship type team. It doesn't mean they couldn't have won it, and I think a lot of people felt that they certainly were the favorites. And that's the thing, like, they were legitimate favorites, but I never thought they were overwhelming favorites. And the only thing that made them appear so was the gap between their record and everybody else's. The regular season is not the postseason, and the postseason tends to be ruled in this league not by perfectly calibrated ensembles, which is what the Suns are, but by teams with superstars. And with all due respect to Chris Paul and Devin Booker, those guys are not at the level of some others in terms of postseason impact, game-to-game impact, the ability to just completely control a game. And, you know, that's the disconnect. The disconnect is that they looked dominant on paper because of their record and because, you know, look, offensive efficiency, defense efficiency, all the usual, you know, broad metrics. But who was going to take over the game? Who was going to stem the bleeding when they needed to? And it's also possible, as my buddy Mark Spears reported, that Chris Paul might have had some sort of serious, what was it, I think he said hamstring?
Quad.
And you know, Chris Paul is the kind of player who's never going to cop to any of that until much later, if at all. And so was that an issue? But the fact is the bottom fell out. Like, you know, you should be able to get through that. And it's not as if the Dallas Mavericks were stacked either. You know, if I'm going to assess what a team was and whether they had the profile of a contender, I would have said I didn't think the Mavericks are a contender either, because Luka, top five player in the league right now, but nobody else of real consequence. Even though Jalen Brunson has, you know, had a nice breakthrough season, and Spencer Dinwiddie's going to make some shots now and then, but like that's not that team doesn't look like a super team.
No.
So I still expected the Suns to win that series, and so I'm not saying it's not an upset, but I don't think it's as colossal of a collapse as some people might believe.
And I really like the fact that you do not pander, Howard. Rick Bucher doesn't pander. He came on our program after Game 5, and he did not like the way Devin Booker clowned Luka. He did not like the way that he was focusing so much on referees. What do you think of Devin Booker in the context of what you just described, in terms of being that playoff killer, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to carry yourself with that kind of energy, then you obviously need to back it up. And he faded hard in that series, and I'm not sure what to attribute that to. Sometimes things just happen, but I think that, you know, the aggression or the swagger, the attitude he was showing that Bucher was alluding to on your show, can be healthy if as long as you're also channeling it into your game.
Yeah.
And, you know, it can't just be bluster. It can't just be, things you're saying or the way you're carrying yourself or the back and forth with another player or with the rabbit. Like, it has to be channeled into your game. And if it's not there, then the rest of it doesn't matter.
We're talking with Howard Beck, senior writer from Sports Illustrated here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Last season, the Suns did not address the DeAndre Ayton question in terms of the max contract extension that he wanted. So we get to deal with it this summer and do so after a disappointing exit from the playoffs. I mean, what do you foresee happening with the DeAndre Ayton saga? Do the Suns all of a sudden just play it cool and match any offer? Do you think there's a really good chance he moves on? How do you see it right now, Howard?
It's really hard to read, to be honest. I mean, you know, clearly they had concerns, whether it was simply tax concerns, whether it's simply flexibility, let's wait and see and not make the decision until we have to kind of approach, whether it's, you know, back to the Suns' old bad habits of kind of being a little cheap over the last 10, 15 years, mm-hmm. Which has reared its head now and then under this ownership. Is it that? It could be any of these things. But when they end the way they ended, and when it's ending with DeAndre Ayton playing 17 minutes and then Monty Williams giving a mysterious kind of it's internal, you start to think that maybe there's a lack of faith in the player and that it's not just about, you know, worrying about is he truly worth a max? Is he truly worth all the luxury taxes that are kind of come behind it and all that? You start to wonder if they have other concerns. And it's really fascinating how that happened literally on the last day of their season.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think we left, if the season had ended, you know, 24 hours sooner, you know, if whatever the incident was on the bench never happens and we don't get that mysterious comment from Monty Williams, we have a different image in our head of what Monty or what DeAndre Ayton means to the team and what they might be willing to do with him contractually. But it feels like there's a cloud now, and it makes you wonder if there's, you know, a parting of the ways coming. There are plenty of teams out there that will go all out to get him, I think. He's a unique quantity, and I have no sense of where that's going to go, but it is fascinating.
Last question. This is great stuff, Howard. One of the things the Suns got, in my opinion, trapped into was the foul hunting and the ref baiting, and then they kind of got too much into that lane in the postseason. But in a bigger vein, we're seeing flopping all over the place. Whatever happened to the NBA's dedication to getting this out of the game, and how badly does that need to get cleansed from the game now, in your opinion?
Well, the fact that you have not seen anybody get a warning or a fine for flopping in quite a while obviously means that the league solved the problem. And so, you know, I think we should be congratulating the league for a really, really effective campaign over the last 10 years. The NBA is weird like this. Like, they'll do these crackdowns with, you know, usually at the beginning of the season. It's like, this is the year that we're going to get palming out of the game. I think that might have been the thing once upon a time.
Yeah.
This is the year we're going to clean up this aspect that, and then it erodes, and by the end of the year it feels like everything's back to where it was. And yeah, occasionally they'll get something reined in a little bit. The flopping thing is strange because it feels like they've just completely abandoned it, as you guys note. And I don't know whether there's any rhyme or reason to it other than it's really hard to, you know, to adjudicate, to track. And maybe, you know, if there are enough complaints, this is how it goes. If there are enough complaints from fans and media and from basketball people themselves, and the competition committee decides, hey guys, you know what, this is kind of eroded again, we need to do something about it, then it'll, you know, they'll try. But, I haven't asked anybody recently about it at league headquarters. I imagine if they were telling the truth, they'd probably say, you know, we got it tamped down a little bit for a while, and then we just kind of lost interest or something. Like, they wouldn't say lost interest. They would just probably say that it was hard to really fairly adjudicate on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, because it requires, you know, all these reviews after the fact. And they do review every game. They review every play of every game to make sure they got all the stats correct for the all-time archives and all that stuff. And, you know, as you guys know, fouls are upgraded and downgraded, and we have last 2 minute reports. And so there's an army of people who are reviewing this stuff all the time, but apparently they're not flagging the flops anymore.
No.
And is it a problem? You know, depends on the day, right? Depends
yeah.
on the game.
True.
But
okay.
We'll see.
Howard, great stuff.
Thank
Thanks
you,
so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.